It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Our Goal Chat. Again, there is no football for us to discuss this week as lockdown continues, but we will strive to give you your weekly fix of all things green. Now, I must apologise for the sound quality as it might not be as good as usual, but joining me over the phones are Chris Errington and Jack Ball. Hiya, guys. How are you? All right?
It's very strange, isn't it? We're all in separate places. Normally when we do these, we're all together in the same room. But yeah, fine. Thank you very much. And I hope all our listeners are well as well. And, you know, coping as best we all can in these very strange times.
Absolutely. How are you, Jack? Are you all right?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm a bit bored of seeing the same few walls, but can't complain too much when all was going on. So just got to try and push through, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah, as I say, we are working from home, but you know, it's important for us guys as well, isn't it, to continue to do what we do and give Argyle fans their weekly dose of, or daily dose of, Argyle content. And the podcast is something that we enjoy doing very much. So we were very keen to continue it for the Green Army, weren't we? Absolutely. Jack, you were up at Home Park on Saturday, weren't you?
I went outside for the first time in 6 days on Saturday. It's because where I live, it's not like there's loads of nice areas to walk around, really. So, you know, after work, it's not really been ideal. And to get anywhere half decent, I'd have to walk for 20 minutes, so I couldn't do it in a lunch break. So I've not really gone anywhere. So, yeah, last Saturday, sorry, I went out for half an hour. I drove up to Central Park rather than walk. I know you're not supposed to drive, but I drove up because I thought that'd be a bit safer than walking the streets up there. You know, I'm less likely to see people in my car than I am on the road. And to go walk around Central Park and everyone was social distancing, it was a bit weird because, you know, you walk past people and normally even dog walkers would say hello, but everyone's just sort of staring at one another, almost looking at them to see whether they've got anything wrong with them.
Yeah.
It was a bit odd, but it was nice to be up at Home Park, and it was nice to see the stadium. It's just a shame we can't go inside and watch some football, but as Chris said, compared to what's going on in the world, I guess that's a small thing, isn't it? Although, for the people that work in it and for the people that, you know, earn a living through it, I'm sure it's just as big a deal as a lot of other things going on. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It must be very strange to have seen Home Park so quiet on a Saturday afternoon as well.
Oh, yeah, I didn't really think about it being a Saturday, actually. I would normally be able to get a parking space where I've been on Saturday, that's for sure. It's definitely strange times, but, you know, we've been lucky with the weather. People have got gardens. I suppose that's one thing. You know, the weather's been quite nice, ironically, since isolation, hasn't it? It's been the type of weather where everyone would want to be out and about enjoying the sun. But half an hour, it was definitely good to get out for half an hour. And now the clocks have gone forward as well. It's a bit not as dark in the evening, so I should have time after work to go out. And hopefully everyone else is getting a chance to get some fresh air as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What this whole situation has brought home to me is, what would my life be like without sport? You know, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, I'm so restless on a weekend without watching football, and even during the week when there's so little going on. I just wonder how people sort of go about their daily existence if they don't like sport.
I'd imagine they're probably going to the gym and actually fit, like me. So they might be doing something like that. But yeah, you're right. You know, it's, you know, you like a lot more sport than I do. I mean, you like a lot. You watch most sports, don't you? So it's not, that's a weird thing. You know, usually in life, there's no football in the summer, there's normally another sport that people will watch.
Yeah.
Whether that's cricket or whatever. But the fact there's no sports anywhere, apart from, I think you were saying before, they're called Belarus or somewhere, isn't that?
That's right, yeah. Apparently they're continuing with their national sports in Belarus. So I think the Ice Hockey League is going ahead, and so is the National Football League. And the Prime Minister was actually pictured at some Belarusian ice hockey game at the weekend, with his pads on, ice hockey stick, and he basically said, this is the safest place I can be, because being inside the ice hockey stadium is like being inside a fridge. So I don't know if what the World Health Organization would say about that, but... Yeah, what about you, Chris?
You still enjoying your Saturday night TV?
I've been watching all sorts of strange things on TV. I mean, you are right, Stu. All of us, sort of sport and football in particular, but it's such a big part of our lives. And for it not to be there, it's just such a strange feeling. I mean, when the football season ends, you still have summer sports, don't you? You know, I like cricket, golf. You like your cricket, don't you?
Yeah, I love my cricket.
There's always some sport going on. So if you sat in an evening with the remote control in the hand when I wrestled it off Mrs. Harrison, to be looking through and have no sport apart from highlights from whenever, it's strange. And we all work Saturdays and weekends, and I did find this weekend really strange, because it just felt like there was something missing. It really, and I know it's obvious, but it just felt like something was missing. It's really, really strange.
Yeah, absolutely.
To try and cure my non-football boredom, I was trying to find, do you remember the programme that was on Sky Dream Team?
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to find a box set for that, but I can't find it anywhere. I was going to buy it for a big chance to watch that again. I loved that back in the day. And I don't know how I'd feel watching it now. It probably seemed quite dated, but I used to really enjoy that, but I can't even find that anywhere, so I'm struggling.
Well, I think there might be a reason why that's not available on box set, Jack.
On the TV and watch some of the Argyle match day moments. Over the years, and we've watched some absolute crackers. That's been my football fix for the last couple of weeks, really. You know, watching some of those. So I don't know if Charlie ever listens to our podcast, but thank you to Charlie, because when you look back at some of the Argyle match day moments he's done over the years, they are fantastic. The production quality of them is brilliant, and if you've never watched them, and you know, now's probably a time as good as any to catch up. You know, go on YouTube or something like that, or whatever it is, and catch up with some of those. It brings back some great memories. We watched the Argyle Portsmouth League 2 playoff semi-finals. The two legs, and it was great to watch those. And that's something you might consider doing when you've got a spare hour or two.
A spare 24 hours or two, you mean?
That's the other weird thing about weekends at the moment. Because obviously in my new role, I tend to work Monday to Fridays now. And normally, you know, no matter what job you do, by the time it gets to Friday evening, you're like, oh, I can't wait for the weekend.
Yeah.
And I sort of did have that feeling. Then it got to Friday evening after I finished work, I thought, well, hang on, this is just going to be the same as the last 5 days. Doesn't even feel like the weekend really exists anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I sit next to you at work, don't I, Jack? And I can tell the listeners that are listening to the podcast that, Jack, I think you really got your love for football back this season, didn't you? And certainly for supporting Argyle.
Oh, definitely. Well, you know, Ryan Lowe definitely brought a positivity back to the side. And, you know, it's easy sometimes when you go through a bad run of form like Argyle did under Derek Adams last season to forget the good that happened just before that, and there were good times before that. You know, they were on the verge of the League One playoffs the season before, so you know, it's not like it was all bad times. But this season, I think getting away from the fact I'm not covering games either anymore, I'm not back on news, and I am just basically a fan again, it really did bring the love of football back to me. And you know, I've enjoyed it. Weirdly enough, it's been a year ago today that I covered my last game, which was Blackpool away. So for a year, I've been a fan, and I'm loving it really. And it's been apart from relegation, it's been pretty much all plain sailing so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to what you're saying though, Chris, and Charlie Rose's match day moments, I think we should give a shout out to all the media teams, not just the Argyle, but up and down the country, because they're working hard to, you know, keep that engagement going. And there's so many great things going around at the moment, isn't there? I know Leighton Orient set up the FIFA World Cup thing, or not World Cup, but you know what I mean. They got all the clubs involved and had that big knockout competition, didn't they? But that's one of many things that are going on right now in order for fan engagement to continue.
Yeah, you're
88,000, yeah, incredible. Absolutely, absolutely.
Also, I tell you what I do quite like about it as well, is sometimes, you know, on sport over the last few years, we've done some light-hearted stuff, and sometimes certain people don't react to it particularly well, but what's been quite nice, people have been understanding the reasons behind it, they've been getting involved. The comments haven't been full of people saying, oh, this is a waste of time, why are you doing that? Although I must say, there was one, I can't remember the name of the person, I wouldn't name them anyway, but there was one person who commented on the FIFA video of the weekend saying, why are these players playing football? They should be they count as key workers now. And someone had to remind them it was just a game of FIFA. So that shows you how realistic FIFA is now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, talking about that, how did you enjoy that, Chris? Commentating on a FIFA match? It was certainly a first for you, wasn't it?
I've done lots of things in my 23 years watching Argyle, Stu. I've been stuck up cranes. I've been to all sorts of weird and wonderful places. But that was a first. First one we did, I wasn't sure what to make of it, to be honest. I wasn't sure if anyone was going to watch it. I had the dog charging around the dining room while I was trying to do it, so it perhaps wasn't my best performance. I think I might have raised the game a bit at the weekend, and hopefully people might have appreciated the commentary a bit more.
Well, I was saying just to you as well, you know, if I was doing it, you're first doing it, you must feel a bit of a conker doing it. You know, you must feel a bit odd at first. You have to sort of get your head around that, I'd imagine. That's what I think I'd have to do if I was trying to do that.
I think you did a great job, Chris, because it's so difficult to do a commentary at the best of times, let alone a FIFA game, when you've got, and when you've got no one to bounce off as well, it makes it even more harder again.
I made sure to do some research on Grimsby, so I knew who I was watching for them, so...
Absolutely.
And if it does become hard doing commentary, you could always try and get Mrs. Errington involved. It could be a dream team for commentary.
If she was commentating on an Argyle game, it might get quite vocal.
Definitely. It should be said as well, of course, Argyle unbeaten in those two games. A 1-0 draw against Exeter and then a 2-0 win against Grimsby. Would you have taken those results, Jack?
In real life?
In real life, yeah. No, absolutely. Chris, you mentioned...
discussing 4 points out of six in this podcast, I've got to be honest.
Chris, you mentioned there earlier on about being stuck up a crane. Of course, we heard the news over the weekend about Dan McCauley sadly passing away. Yes. I'm sure you've come into Dan many times throughout your time covering Argyle. What's your memories of Dan, apart from being stuck up a crane, of course?
Character, and he could divide opinions, but when you favourably on that. You know, Matt Kennedy when he was at Cardiff is an example of that. Dan, of course, was the chairman when Argyle went to Wembley for the first time and their only victory at Wembley when they won the player final against Darlington. So I think, you know, a bit of credit is due for that. He appointed Paul Stark as Argyle manager.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that was a board decision. The board persuaded Dan that was the way to go. It was a bit of a left field appointment at the time. But again, he was the chairman that sanctioned it and went with it. And what a great signing that was for Argyle. And it got them, propelled them from mid-table, fourth tier English football to the Championship, second division. And I suppose the final thing I'd say about Dan is that there was lots of talk over the years about the stadium and redeveloping Home Park. And there was talk of a Tradium that the longer standing fans will remember. And there were lots of false storms. But ultimately, not long before Dan moved on, it was all signed and sealed to build the three sides, the horseshoe at Home Park. So when he did leave the club in 2001, they had Paul Stark as a manager and three sides of the ground being redeveloped. So although there were issues and problems and controversy along the way, I think when you look back at it, I think, you know, Dan McCauley did a lot of good for the football club.
Absolutely. I think back to the Argyle team at that time, and as you say, he invested so much of his own money that they were almost like a Peterborough of today. Do you know what I mean? Peterborough have a reputation for picking up all the best of lower league and non-league talent, you know, these days. Back then, that's what Argyle were doing. I'm thinking of like Paul Dalton, Steve Castle, Kevin Nugent, players like that.
Man, you know, that wrote a lot of the company that used to sponsor Argyle on the shirt. That was where he made his money. And like I say, I think he did a good job. He passed on to a consortium who did a good job for Argyle and got them moving forward under Paul. So, of course, things could have always been better and this, that and the other. But I think when you look back over the 10 years and what was achieved and the people that were at the club and everything, I think he did a good job. So I put in the piece I did at the weekend, but you know, sympathies to Dan's family and friends, and some good times with Dan McCauley in charge, as well as a few sort of eventful ones as well.
Absolutely, Jack. It's probably before your time, isn't it, Dan McCauley? But I'm sure you would be well aware of Dan McCauley, the chairman and the person, and you know what he did for Argyle.
Hindsight and not think they could have done a few things differently. So, you know, and Chris is right, you know, I think he's certainly got a legacy, and hopefully people remember the good parts and, you know, the foundations he left it on to move forward. And I think everyone, if you go back in history, everyone plays their part, don't they? And it leads you to where you are now. So I think everyone should be grateful and remember the good times.
Absolutely. And as Chris said, our condolences go to Dan and his family and friends, of course. Jack, you're going to take us out into the break with your half-time teaser?
I am, and I must say, I think this is the toughest one yet. I'm almost sure that you will not get this, Stu. Chris might, but this is the toughest one I'd say so far.
Right, okay.
So again, I've left one clue for after the break as well, so I'll let you know when that is. Okay, clue number one. He was born in Montpellier on January the 10th, 1978. Chris's maths. I know Chris likes to add up how old he is at this point.
1978.
January 10th, 1978.
Okay.
Let me know when you think you might have it. He moved to Home Park in 2002. Sorry, go on.
Well, 42-year-old Frenchman. Anyway, carry on.
Do you think you might have it already? 2008, he moved to Australia to try and find an A-League team to play for. So those are all the clues. I've got one more clue that I'll do after the break.
Okay. Have you got any ideas, Chris?
I think so.
Okay.
I think I might have driven his car, but I could be wrong.
Well, we'll find out after the break. Well, welcome back to the second half of the podcast. Jack, are we going to get the final clue for this Frenchman?
The final clue. The last clue is, before moving to England from France originally, he played in the same Valencia team as Romain Larrion.
Yeah, I haven't got a clue who this is. I did think it might have been the guy that was at Torquay for a bit as well. The name escapes me. French guy, but I don't think it is him.
Is he a midfielder, Jack?
Oh, I didn't see what position he played in. Yes, I think he was.
Shall I guess a name?
Yep, go on then, Chris.
Was it Jean-Philippe Chavarin?
It was. Did you get that?
Great story.
When I was researching that, I thought, well, I don't recognise that name. So I clicked on it and then thought, well, you need 4 games. That's surely going to be a bit obscure for Chris. And you got it after 3 clues. And you have a great story about him as well.
Only because I've driven his car, really. It's much better. I can't remember what car it was, but I just remember driving up there and parking it. And like I say, I've not been back on the Argyle team bus many times. And I was sat on the bus and we were all waiting there for David Worrell to get checked out. So I remember that Barnet came quite well.
Absolutely.
All the players whose cars you could have driven, it would have to be someone that only played 4 games. And I thought it would be a tough one for you to get.
Right, we're getting back to the...
I'll have to work harder for next week.
Yeah, come on, Jack. You need to up your game.
Honestly, I thought that could be the first one where Chris might be a little bit stumped.
But getting back to the podcast then, guys, there was a little bit of news this week and academy news, really. Curtis is leaving his role as the assistant manager of Plymouth Parkway to go to Argyle. He's taken up a coaching role within the academy. Do you know any more than that, Chris?
He's going to be a lead age group coach. I don't know the age. It's a part-time role, but he's going to be involved in the academy. Lots of changes that have happened to the Argyle Academy over recent months. Neil Dewsnip, the director of football, is, I think, overseeing the academy. They obviously appointed Darren Way, the former Yeovil Town manager, as under-18s head coach. And we spoke to Mike Parrish a few weeks ago from Plymouth Parkway, didn't we, Stu?
Yeah.
And Carl Curtis was the number two to Lee Hobbs at Parkway. They've both done a tremendous job at Parkway, as we discussed that day with Mike. You talk to people, you look at the Parkway players, they rate and respect Carl Curtis a lot. Carl was an apprentice in his day years ago. And I think it's a good sign that the Argyle Academy are looking at people like him to bring in and work with the young players. He's clearly got a lot of... coaching attributes, so I think that looks quite an exciting appointment, really.
Yeah, I always think with people like that that have been in the academy as well, they know what it's about and they know what they didn't get or what they did get, you know, things that don't work well and things that do work well within the academy, and they can you know, try and improve that aspect of the academy, I guess.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think it can only strengthen that bond between Argyle and Parkway and that link-up that they have going forward. Just discussing Parkway, and obviously there's a lot of Argyle players at the moment that are out, or young players that are out on loan at lower league clubs. I'm thinking Truro and Alex Fletcher, of course, is at Tiverton. A real shame to see the non-league season ending prematurely when, you know, some of those young players have got so much to play for right now.
The campaign with Luke Jeffcott and has stayed there ever since, playing under Paul Watson, and they looked as though they were on course for promotion and the league title, and that's not going to be the case because all the football between steps 3 and 6 in the football pyramid, their seasons have been declared null and void. Step 3 is the Southern League, and then you work your way down, so no promotion for Truro this season, which, you know, has got to be very disappointing when you've put in so much hard work and effort since July. And of course, when you play part-time football, it's not just your only job, is it? You've got a day job to juggle around as well, so it's quite a commitment when you play part-time football, and got to be very, very disappointing for the likes of Truro. Tiverton were trying to get into the promotion mix, weren't they, as well? So a difficult situation. That's the way that they've gone. How the EFL and the Premier League will deal with things, you know, is anyone's guess at the moment, isn't it? But there's got to be a possibility that seasons might not get finished.
I think we're getting to that point. Well, I don't think it's going to happen in the short term, but I think if we get to the end of June and we're still in this situation of lockdown, I can't see how they're going to finish the season, can you?
I think this should have been a last resort, and I kind of feel like it's been done far too early, and I think it's a shame when you've played so many of your games that you can just avoid it like that. I'm not sure what I think about that. And also, you're going to have a league now, I'm guessing, where relegation is not going to happen because you can't drop because our teams get promoted, but promotion will still happen from that division, and it just makes a bit of a mockery out of it, really. I know it's a difficult situation, but I feel like the priorities should have been, and the EFL should be, trying to finish this season whatever way they can, and then if next season has to be delayed, then so be it. I think you need to try and finish a season that's been 75% complete rather than worrying about a season that's not been started by anybody yet. That's my view, and I think it's a shame, you know, that's happened so early for these clubs that are lower down, you know, because to them there might not be as much money in lower league football and non-league football, but to them it's just as important, and it, you know, they've given 75 to 80% of their time this season to try and get themselves into that position. And, you know, Watton, speaking locally, Paul Watton had a chance to get promotion as Truro. You know how brutal management can be at times. If they don't start well next season, you know, there's always these knife edge moments, aren't there? And I just think it's a real shame, really. Although I don't envy the people that have to make these decisions.
No, absolutely. I take your point, Jack. I think when you look lower down the league structure, though, and when you look at clubs like Parkway, and not so much Tavistock, but they were playing catch up with their fixtures and they were falling a long, long way behind. So, they'd actually only played just over half of their league games this season. So I think it's a little bit easier to call it null and void when they haven't played. You know, whereas we look at the Premier League and the EFL and we're into the last 10 games of the season, you know, with some of the non-league clubs, they're just over halfway through their fixtures.
I know that's some of them, but, you know, there were some leagues where teams had already won the title.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one. I just think that you can't have some rule for some and not for the others. Because like I said, there's going to be a point where you have one division where teams aren't going to get relegated because there are no teams getting promoted, but teams from that division will still go up. So it's a tough one. It is a tough one.
Yeah, I think it was Guernsey or Jersey, one of the Channel Islands teams that have won every single game this season, or they're undefeated so far this season and won the league, but they're not going to get promoted now because the season's been declared null and void. And you think of the financial costs for them as well, coming over to play on the mainland every other week.
You also have to wonder whether some of these teams maybe would have played over, it's a tough one.
It's interesting.
It's just so hard when there's so many fixtures have been played for so many teams.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I actually spoke to Stuart Henderson at Tavistock last week, and he said if they had the chance, the players would play through the summer. And I said to him, I can understand that, because I think non-league footballers, whereas for, you know, EFL and Premier League players, it is a job. Those that play non-league football do it for the love of the game. And they would. They would play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday if they had to. Do you know what I mean? Just to play all those games and finish the season.
That's why I think it was just a bit premature. I'm not saying that at some point this wouldn't have had to be decided and this would have had to be chosen. But I just feel that at the moment, we're not even at the end of March. We'll just get to the end of March now. I think it's a very premature act, to be honest. And I think it's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think will happen with the EFL? How do you see it panning out? Do you agree with that, Chris?
Yeah, I would. Reading between the lines of things that you see in the national media, the behind closed doors might be the route that certainly the Premier League go, and maybe the EFL as well. There's just so many. I mean, there's so many complications. Whatever route you go down in terms of trying to get football back, you know, I would have thought it made more sense to try and finish season one way or the other, and then if you've got to completely reshape the 2020-21 season and say don't have any cup competitions for one season, just play league games or any other sort of variation of that, I would have thought be better and fairer and cause less division than either cancelling the season completely and just saying it never happened, or saying, well, look, these are the league positions at the moment, and you know, the teams in the promotion places go up and the teams in the relegation places go down. So I think if you've got to play the final nine games of the season behind closed doors, get them played and then reassess for 2020-21 after that, I think it's probably the best one. I'd prefer it if the games are played in front of people, but yeah. Right now, that seems quite hard to believe, doesn't it?
I totally agree. I think we'll get to a stage where some of the restrictions on the country will be lifted, but I can't see there being any mass gatherings for quite some time. So my personal view is that I think they'll play the games behind closed doors. They'll use iFollow for season ticket holders to you know, be able to watch for free. The ordinary match day going fan will be able to subscribe to iPlayer and watch it for, say, £10 a game. And unfortunately, the games are going to get played behind closed doors. But at least everyone will still be able to get their football fix then, and the clubs will still be able to make some sort of money from the matches.
That's a good point you make as well, because I think if you suggested that maybe a month ago, people would have been saying, no, I don't want it behind closed doors. I've paid my money, but now I think it will snap their hands off.
Yeah, I think so.
Behind closed doors games. So, you know, I think, you know, if it gets to a situation where, because it's a global, it's not like this is a virus that's just spreading across the UK. Because it's a global thing, like, I'm thinking about player contracts obviously end at a certain point.
Yeah.
There has to be some sort of coming together that's extended if needed until, I don't know, just say the end of August and the season doesn't start until October or something. You know, that, do you know what I mean? There has to be some sort of joined up thinking between everyone, I think, for this to work.
Absolutely. Well, I think contracts expire at the end of June, don't they? But I think clubs are obliged to pay until the end of July. There's a 4 month leeway period. So yeah. I think
but every division has to have the same sort of rules, because you can't be having some players being snapped up while the season's still being played because everything's been delayed. Everyone has to come together, and there has to be some sort of unified rule, in my view, if it's going to work.
Yeah, I think that's what will happen. I personally think that we'll get to the end of May and they'll make a decision to see what it's like at the end of June. But I think if we get to the end of June and things are going to be the same, I just fear the worst. And I think they're going to say, look, we're just going to null and void the season because there's too many legal implications with regards to player contracts and things like that, and we'll just start again from whenever we start again.
And I don't know the answer to this question. I know there's a bigger picture to this than the money for people that pay for tickets. But if you're a season ticket holder and you pay for a season ticket,
yeah,
and it's been platted null and void, I don't know what legal ramifications will then happen for clubs up and down the country. You know, I wouldn't want to take money away from Argyle, but you can understand some people saying, well, hang on, yeah, I pay all this money for something that counts for nothing. I just think that's also going to be a logistical nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, potentially. I think a lot of clubs are going to be reliant on the goodwill of fans to say, look, I understand what's happened. Don't worry, I don't want a refund. It'd be interesting to find out, actually, because obviously the rugby season's finished below the Gallagher Premiership, which affects Plymouth Albion, of course. And I'm sure there are plenty of Plymouth Albion season ticket holders that will be in that exact boat right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And like I said, I don't envy whoever has to make these decisions, because whatever you pick, some people are going to be unhappy. But I think the fairer thing to do, if possible, is to get the games finished somehow, and then everyone, whatever happens next season, at least everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah.
I don't think having some rules for some and some rules for others, and you know, wiping out games when some teams would have benefited, for some teams it doesn't matter because they wouldn't get relegated. I think that's just going to be a much bigger headache.
Yeah, I agree. Well, chaps, thank you very much for your time. Are you still there, Chris?
Thank you, Steve. it's all a bit strange doing it like this, but I think we've covered a few topics there, haven't we?
So, yeah, we tried to do our best.
Obviously,
thanks to Steve, for you're the one sorting all this all out. You've got me and Chris both on the phone, and you're doing the logistical side of it. So people should thank you for being able to bring this together.
Oh, pleasure. As I say, I enjoy doing the podcast. So, and it's also nice to be able to speak to people as well, because I live on my own. So it's gets a little bit lonely talking to these four walls all the time.
one thing worth mentioning, Stu, is that the EFL, Premier League and PFA are having more talks this week.
Yeah.
So I suspect at some point between now and Friday, we're not going to get definite answers, but I think there will be developments in terms of what happens to this season. So keep your eyes peeled, because I think we'll find out a little bit more about what the Football Authority's plans might be. They're not going to come up with data, I would have thought, or anything like that, but they're clearly trying to do a joint plan. From all the comments that I've seen, they're trying to have a uniform way forward, so that Premier League and the EFL will be in the same step, rather than going their own different ways and how they're going to restart the season or get football back to us at some point in time in the future.
Absolutely. Well, as I say, thanks to you guys for joining me, and thanks to you out there for listening. Stay safe. You know, the sooner we all abide by the government rules and what have you and stay at home, the sooner, hopefully, this will all be over and we can get back to watching football and talking about it as well. So stay safe. Take care. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.